We're going to talk about cursing this hour, but we can't curse on the air. The FCC says that we can't use certain words on the public airwaves, so we won't. But be advised, you might hear some euphemisms along the lines. Good morning, I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 8.5 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Thursday, October 13th. Do you think it's okay to use curse words from time to time? How about a lot? Do you think that the public in general swears too much? What's good or bad about swearing, in your opinion? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Michael Adams, a professor of English at Indiana University Bloomington. He is author of the book In Praise of Profanity, and he recently wrote an article for The Conversation, which was titled Do We Swear Too Much? Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
And the answer to that question, according to your research, is no, we don't swear too much.
No. No, we don't swear as much as we think we do would be another way of putting it, because when we're just walking down the street and someone swears around us, we hear that immediately. We miss all of the other words that people around us are speaking. I mean, you take it as a percentage of the total speech output of any speaker during the day or all of us together during the day, it ends up being about, according to the most prominent estimate, about 0.5%. Of our speech on average, which isn't as much as we think it is.
No, yeah, that's right. It's not. I have been, I think, consciously trying to cut down on my swearing.
Uh-huh.
In part because in broadcasting, you have to believe that every mic is a hot mic, and you can't swear.
Right.
So there are certain reasons why I can't swear. But you're saying that swearing really isn't. Isn't all that bad for us? In fact, in some ways, it's good for us?
Well, in some ways, it's good for us. That's certainly true. But I want to underscore that it can be bad. You can use swear words in conversation to bring people down or hurt people.
Yeah.
So insofar as language can be a loaded weapon, swearing can aid in aggressive encounters. But I wouldn't focus too much on those. That is, I don't think they're any more frequent than the positive uses of profanity, and you can be plenty mean without using any profanity at all. So in a sense, I would say don't blame the messenger. It's not necessarily the profanity that's so bad. It's the intentions behind the profanity and the context in which it's used.
Yeah. So why do people, even though we may not swear as much as we think we do, why do people some people seem to love using profanity?
Well, it's an easy way to bond with people because it's a little risky. It used to be very risky. So if you were in some sort of a business setting or something and you let loose with some swear word you weren't supposed to say and the other person smiled at you and responded in kind, then you knew you had a companion there or a partner. Because you could trust each other to do that illicit thing. Now, there isn't as much taboo about swearing, but we still know that it's risky language. So, we use it to bond in intimate relations, think sex talk. We use it in the locker room and the boardroom, and we use it even to build brand communities, very loose associations of people. But profanity is surprisingly productive in advertising or in establishing brand identities. So these are just ways that people tend to come together around the pleasure of swearing.
Wait, it's prevalent in the brand community? I don't understand.
That it's difficult to describe because of the constraints on radio. But here's an old example that I'm sure some Wisconsin listeners will know. There's a clothing company called French Connection UK.
Oh yes,
that used to use the initialism FCUK, kind of like DKNY, Donna Karen New York. It's the same principle in making a brand name, but when people saw that, they immediately transposed the letters and came up with the swear word, and the French Connection UK was quite open about the fact that it was trading on that word. And so that's an old example. The best example I know of now is on the internet, and there's a microblogging platform on Tumblr, which is called F Yeah. And F Yeah is an opportunity to show pictures of things that really turn you on, that really excite you. And so there are F Yeah blogs about wedding cakes and about particle physics and about anything that could make somebody excited. And they find their little audiences of affiliation as a result of those blogs. But the thing that really gets me about it is that we're told that the F word particularly is really bad and an aggressive word and still pretty taboo. But people who are using that microblogging platform use it as a term of celebration. It's really about the things you like that are positive in your life. So it's kind of turned the meaning of the word completely around, and in the interest of building brand community.
I get it. And it that reminds me of a favorite science site of many on Facebook. It's I effing love science.
Yeah.
And
people,
I have to. I'm
just that excited about it. Yeah.
And I have to think twice before I share something from there because I there are listeners in my audience or social media friends and followers who may not like that word.
Right. Yeah. You have to be sensitive to people's reaction to it, for sure.
Yeah. So, even though the research says that profanity only makes up about 0.5% of our daily verbal output, as a whole, is society swearing more? Is it more accepted than it used to be?
I think you have to sort of slice up what counts as society in this case. I don't know that we can say with any confidence that in conversation we swear more than we used to. Although someone pointed out to me recently that women probably swear more than they used to. I don't know though that that's true because I don't know what women were saying in private when they were homemakers in the 1930s and 40s, and we don't have reliable research from that period about how much people swore. But it's true, even if we're not swearing more in conversation, that we're presented with more profanity than we used to be because there are certain cable networks that can use profanity in their television shows. There's a lot more stand-up comedy than there used to be. Newspapers are more willing to print profanity. And I don't know that the rate of use is so high overall, but it does seem to come at us from more angles than it used to come at us.
Yeah, because on cable TV, if you pay for TV, it's not, a free public airwaves, so there are more restrictions from the FCC on Wisconsin Public Radio. In fact, we never used to have it, but now we do have a profanity dump button. And we in the old days, I guess we didn't worry too much about it, but maybe we worried more when the FCC started fining stations when it turned up once in a while.
So
you talked about women maybe. Somebody said maybe women are swearing more than they used to, though you're not sure about that. When we look at this demographically, what age groups or generations curse more?
It's certainly the case that younger generations swear more than older generations, at least as far as we can measure it. It's also true that people in urban settings swear more than people in rural settings, who are more likely to employ euphemisms. So there's a wide variation in the way people use it. It's possible that there could be some big explosion of profanity in the future. We'd find people speaking profanity at a rate that's unfamiliar to us. But you get older, you take on more responsibility, you think through your life more carefully, you're not as interested in the project of building interpersonal relationships in the way that adolescents and people in their 20s are, and I suspect your swearing slows down as a result of that. And of course, again, this is on average because there are people who swear a blue streak all the way through their lives and until their deathbeds. And, that's not me, but that's somebody out there. But most people are more restrained.
Kirill, who I happen to know on Facebook, says, I'm from New York. What do you think when I ask, do you swear? So big city folks swear more than the rest of us?
Yeah, I'm gonna spin a little theory here that I can't test myself in the field. But one reason we have profanity, I think, is in order to cry out in frustration or anger. If you're living a serene life in the American wilderness, you may not rupture the sweet air around you with profanity, because you just don't find yourself in situations where profanity is useful language. You don't need that sort of expression. This is just me, but I don't live in a city, and there's a reason for that. If I lived in the city, I'd be swearing all the time, because I find city life intensely frustrating, and I'm sure that lots of people feel that stress in city life, even if they love living in the city. So there are just more expressive occasions in which you reach the limit of what everyday language can provide you, and so you take one step beyond that everyday language into super expression.
Yeah, and let me jump in, because we do have news next from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we'll talk more about the benefits of swearing. We are talking about swearing this hour, and we're wondering if you swear. Why or why not? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Research has found that profanity amounts to roughly 0.5% of the average speaker's speech, and that's probably a lot less than you think. We are talking with a guest who says we really don't swear all that much, and swearing isn't all that bad, that there are some positive aspects, benefits of cursing. And we, again, welcome your thoughts and questions for our guest, Michael Adams, a professor of English at Indiana University Bloomington, author of the book In Praise of Profanity. And he recently wrote an article for The Conversation, Do We Swear Too Much? So I said we'd talk some about the benefits of swearing. And is this true that it has been found that if we swear, it relieves pain?
Yeah, it isn't my own research by any means. I'm just as much getting it at secondhand as you or your listeners would. But yeah, there are some recent studies that show that, for instance, if you're holding your hand in a basin of iced water, if you swear, you're able to keep your hand in the water longer, because you are releasing the stress of that pain along the way. That's kind of amazing when you think about it, and a very clever research design, I think.
Which reminds me, Linda on Facebook says, I used to say sugar when I hit my finger with a hammer or something like that, instead of using what maybe some of us would say instead.
Sure.
Can't we just use euphemisms instead of curse words? Wouldn't that relieve pain too?
It doesn't do it as well. And I'm sure that the exclaiming is part of what's releasing the frustration or the anxiety or the stress that people feel in situations like that. But it's also true that words have phonetic structures that are really good sometimes at communicating frustration or anger. And it has to do with the consonants at the beginning and the ends of the words and how short the vowel is. And it's hard to think of language this way. We've internalized speech so much, but really every time you're saying a sound in your mouth, you're gesturing with things that are inside your mouth. You're not flipping the bird, that type of a gesture, but you may be striking or spitting effectively in a way that shows how angry you are. And some of the relief comes from that activity, that gesturing that you're doing sort of secretly in your mouth, or if you come out with that profanity in the end loudly enough, not so secretly.
Catherine on Facebook says, there are too many other words in the English language to use swear words. There was no swearing in my home, nor in my married home. I remember talking to a guest who had that point of view, saying there are so many other words in the English language, there's no need to use profanity or curse words, and also thought that it just made you sound stupid if you did. What's your response to that?
Well, it's certainly true that you can do without them if you want to, and there are people of various religious persuasions around the world who try to eliminate swearing from vocabularies, either because they're thinking of the swearing that takes God's name in vain, or because they think that there's something unclean about the swear words, and that's fair enough. That it limits expression or that it makes you sound stupid doesn't strike me as plausible, simply because there have been lots of smart and careful writers over the course of modern history, at least European history, who've used swear words in order to express something they thought was important in a poem or a novel or a play. In the book, I say at one point that I hope my daughter, who's 4 years old now, will learn how to swear effectively.
Why?
When she gets older. Well, because there is something gendered about swearing, and men swear to bond in ways that women don't with men anyway, so that relationships in the workplace can develop among men that exclude women as a result of that. And I don't want my daughter to be at a disadvantage anyway. I had proposed that in the book, and the review of the book suggested that maybe that was a plausible idea, but most parents would prefer that their children grow up reciting Shakespeare rather than swearing. And I think that that's a crazy idea, because if you know what Shakespeare's characters are saying, a lot of the time it's obscene. There are euphemisms and puns on traditional swear words, and there are reasons for that in Shakespeare's plays. And so plenty of authors would disagree with the notion that you can always find the words you need to say what you need to say in the non-swearing vocabulary. Sometimes you're looking for a height of expression or something that's jokey or something that's earthy that requires the profanity.
In fact, I noticed this story recently. Researchers at Marist College in New York say that a big vocabulary of curse words is a sign of higher rhetorical skill, and those that can name the most swear words in 1 minute tend to have a greater overall vocabulary. So in essence, saying, you know, it's not so dumb after all. What's your reaction to that?
Well, my reaction is that intuitively makes sense to me after having studied profanity for a while. And it's also true when you're thinking about rhetorical skill that if you have to negotiate the use of complicated words, if you have to figure out when it's best to swear and when you're getting that effect you expect from it, because you won't always get the effect until you're very skilled rhetorically that you expect with risky language, well, that's a type of skill that a lot of people don't have. So the more you vary your vocabulary, the more rhetorically skillful you're going to be. It's not just a matter, it seems to me, of the number of words you know, though that can be important too. It's that you're sensitive to contexts and you use language in ways that suit your purposes within those contexts. And occasionally, for most of us, swearing will fit into a context now and then.
Our guest is Michael Adams, a professor of English at Indiana University Bloomington, author of the book In Praise of Profanity, and also author of an article that was in The Conversation, Do We Swear Too Much?, talking about some of the benefits of profanity and welcoming your thoughts and questions, reactions, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Do you think that we swear too much? Do you think you swear too much? We welcome your questions and your experiences. Eric and Hazel Green is with us. Hi, Eric.
Good morning.
Morning.
I just had a question about earlier your guest spoke about how the consonants and the vowels gave us like a certain satisfaction about swearing. I'm wondering if this carries through in other languages, because they have different words, obviously, or different ways to say the words.
Do we know? Yeah, but do we know if we in the U.S. Swear more, or if the benefits are different because of our language?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know that that Americans swear more because I think people in, say, French culture or Italian culture, swear plenty. But it is true that the sound structures of the languages are different. And while there are examples, for instance, in French of words that have that striking in the swear word, the sounds, I guess you could say, tend to be softer. And it's also true that in some Francophone cultures, like that of Quebec, you're still more likely to hear a profanity like tabernacle, which is a religious profanity, not something to do with sex or excrement or things that, as Americans, we tend to find, at least historically, we tend to find taboo, and our swearing vocabulary in English is sort of centered on those things. Those concepts are available in French profanity, too. But it's a good point. What people hear depends a little bit on the culture they come from.
Thanks, Eric. That reminds me, I think I used to pick up swear words in other languages when I was a kid, and I thought I was, you know, getting away with saying something wrong because nobody could understand it.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go to Greg in Prairie du Chien next. Hi, Greg.
Hi, good morning. Interesting show this morning.
Thank you. So what do you think about it?
Well, I do swear on occasion. I don't have an opinion on it either way. But I was just remembering back when I was younger, I worked at a feed store, and the older gentleman that owned it, he never swore. And instead, he replaced swear words with other words, like his biggest phrase was son of a buck. And everyone knew what that meant, and most people laughed. But when you really think about it, if you know what they're replacing the word for, doesn't it carry just as much weight?
Yeah. What about that, Professor Adams?
Yeah, I think it does carry as much weight, and it points to a paradox in euphemism generally, that you know, we're trying to cover up this swear word that's supposedly so offensive, but some of our euphemism strategies actually force us to say, at least internally, the word that the euphemism's supposedly covering, like a fig leaf, you know? So we see through that. And think of instances where you see in print F asterisk asterisk K. That actually prompts you to swear in your mind, which isn't what the euphemism was seeking to do, but it's the result of it anyway. And so I think that in speech, too, if you've got buck, that's actually, in terms of its sound structure, pretty close to the word that is underlying it. And I'm sure that you get a lot of the same effect, but it's not fooling anybody, and that's part of the point. You couldn't have that phrase, the euphemistic phrase, unless you had the profane phrase to build it on.
I'm just curious, just because a listener called and couldn't stay with us, who wanted to say that he thinks there's a difference between cursing and swearing. Is there a difference? I'm just using the words interchangeably.
When I started to work through the ideas for this book, I sat down, as anybody should, with the Oxford English Dictionary to see how words like obscene and profane and profanity and obscenity and swear were defined. And there are differences. Obviously, swearing and cursing still have, more obviously, the overlay of religious language. So, you know, you curse somebody in the name of God, and that's bad because you shouldn't be using God's name in vain. Or you swear or make an oath in the name of God, and if you do that falsely, then you're taking the name of God in vain. And profane, you know, aligns with that because it means something that's not sacred, and so your language is irreligious if it's profane. But there are these big overlaps. It's like a big Venn diagram, and it's very complicated to work out, where some of our profanity is really hyper-expressive slang, and some of our profanity has religious roots, and some of our profanity is of the modern kind, resisting talking about sex and excrement and other formerly taboo subjects, and still to some extent taboo subjects in certain types of conversations. So it's kind of a jumble. And my conclusion is yours, Joy, that mm-hmm. you can use these terms more or less interchangeably. So sometimes obscenity has a special meaning because it has to do with sex stuff.
Yeah. Let's go next to Ken in Wheeler. Hi, Ken.
Hi there. I've thought about this quite a bit, and it seems like these swear words have taken so long to develop and kind of organically in our language, and they perform an important function. And I'm concerned that overuse of these words will decrease their effectiveness. And I don't think it's something that you can easily replace.
Huh, I never thought of that. So overuse of swear words could make them lose their effectiveness, Professor Adams?
Yeah, I suppose it could, but I've got a lot of respect for the intuitions of everyday speakers in this regard. I think you're right that it is very useful vocabulary, and recent brain science suggests that we store it in the brain in a particular place in a certain way, which suggests that it's been in language for a long time, and in a way we can't have language without it. That doesn't mean you have to use it, but it's part of the language system, so we ought to protect it. And I think that rate of 0.5% right now shows that people intuitively are holding back. They're pretty restrained about the way they use it in conversation, at least, even if they're enjoying it in television or film or music or something like that. And I would rely on speaker intuition to keep us from going too far, because the caller is absolutely right. Those terms we use that we call profanity are old, and they're useful to us partly because everybody recognizes them for what they are. And we couldn't just sit down at a committee table the day after we lost profanity and come up with a new profane vocabulary. So we've got to hold on to what we have.
Well, when we're talking about their effectiveness, we said they can relieve some stress and some pain, what is effective about a swear word?
Well, if you are really disgusted with something, for instance, and you feel you need to make a public statement about it that is abrasive, yeah. Draws a line in the sand, it can be effective in that way. I don't endorse this use particularly, but some people will use profanity to stand out, to be exceptional. And you can think of public figures very famously in an argument with Senator Patrick Leahy. Vice President Cheney told him to go do something,
right.
Which, you know, you can interpret it in a lot of ways. Maybe Vice President Cheney was just sick and tired of hearing about Halliburton from Senator Leahy. But it was also a way in public of saying, argue if you want to, but I'm still the President of the Senate and the Vice President of the United States. Get out of my way. And so you might say, well, that's not the nicest use of profanity, but it was effective.
Yeah, and I'm thinking too of all things a hot mic that picked up Vice President Joe Biden telling President Obama upon the passage of the Affordable Care Act. I think
right. Yeah.
This is a big effing deal.
Yeah, exactly. That sort of exuberance that Vice President Biden shows sometimes comes out in the profanity. And I think that, you know, what words can you think? You could use a sentence like, I am just so completely excited that we finally got this done for the American people. But the more words you use, the less effective mm-hmm. the speech becomes. So it's a way of getting the meaning across in a compact and forceful way.
Let's go to Derek in Milwaukee next. Hi, Derek.
Hello, how are you?
Good, Derek. What's your story?
I was raised by my grandparents, and my grandfather was born in Switzerland and spoke German. Growing up as a child, my grandmother never used profanity at all. And my grandfather, I had thought at the time, never used profanity. Both of them stressed repeatedly that the use of profanity is the last resort of an uninformed mind. Come to find out that my grandfather frequently used profanity. He just spoke it in German, and I didn't realize it.
He swore like a sailor, huh, Derek?
Yeah, he swore like a sailor. But I just thought I'd share that. You have a great program, and have a great day.
Thank you very much, Derek. So I guess do as I say, not as I do was their motto, maybe.
Well, and that's fair, because using profanity well takes some practice and some exposure to it in the world, and it's natural for us to want to protect our children from using it in ways that may come back on them, you know, because they don't understand the consequences of what they're doing. So it's something we grow into gradually if we grow into it, and parents are probably going to be giving that advice, don't use profanity, for a long time.
We are talking about profanity. Our guest is the author of a book in praise of profanity. He says swearing is not all that bad. It has some positive effects as well. We're talking about that. We're welcoming your questions for him. We're welcoming your concerns, maybe. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We'll check news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we'll be back. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking about cursing this hour, or swearing, or using profanity. Talking with our guest, Michael Adams, a professor of English at Indiana University, Bloomington, author of the book In Praise of Profanity, recently wrote an article for The Conversation titled, Do We Swear Too Much? And he says, no, we don't. We only swear 0.5% of the time, and sometimes that swearing actually can be good for us. So we're talking about some of the positive aspects of profanity and welcoming your questions, welcoming your views. Do you swear or not? Why or why not? Do you think society as a whole swears too much or not? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. Or you can post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Here's an email from Anne. She says, I am a 51-year-old mother who doesn't swear at all in general conversation. But I really enjoy it when I go out and snowblow and I'm fighting with the snowblower. Then I really let it go. It feels good and no one can hear me or see me. Funny. That is funny. But it brings up the... Yeah, I think I do a little bit of that, too. I don't swear all the time in general conversation. I'm not swearing up a storm at work or whatever else. But I've been known to let one fly if something goes wrong and I'm in private, or if I think I did something stupid, then I'll say, maybe even to myself. Is there a time and a place for swearing? Does it matter?
It obviously matters, absolutely. I mean, there are settings in which you would just not swear, and that in which I think almost nobody would swear, because you've got the social intelligence to avoid it in those cases, because it's not relevant, or because it'll be disruptive, or because I think this is often the case. We know that we don't want to take the consequences for using it, that it's just too risky for us in that context. But then... in private, it can still serve to release that stress or tension that we were talking about before. And I think it probably points to what I think we're coming to accept as a fact, that profanity is in the brain somewhere, that its function is in the brain. I don't know if you've had heard of this experience, but I've heard a couple of people testify that a grandfather or a parent who had never sworn and real life had brain trauma, a stroke or something like that, and folks are sitting around the hospital bed, and then suddenly grandpa just starts swearing. All these swear words come tumbling out in the middle of conversation, and you think, wow, how could that possibly be? He never swears. But
let me interrupt Professor Adams,
yeah.
Because of all things, Dan in Drummond has a story exactly along those lines.
Oh, yeah, then let's hear that. Yeah.
Hi, Dan.
Yeah, when my hometown in Mellon got their nursing home, there was a lady who was from a little town in Montreal, Wisconsin, who was used to be very prim and proper, would go to church and all that. And I was walking past her room, and I heard what sounded like old sailor swearing. And I asked the nurse about it, and she said, well, she had a very, very bad stroke. And it seems that the only words that she was able to express were the swear words.
Yep, I've heard of that, too. I've heard of that with stroke or with dementia or something else, too, that people who didn't really swear before were swearing up a storm after. So you think that might even be that it's in our brain.
Yeah, now that we store this vocabulary a little bit differently from the way we store the rest of the words, and it comes out unexpectedly. In the case of trauma or some sort of dysfunction, Sometimes I suppose it's the only vocabulary the person can get hold of. But I've also often wondered whether, in an attempt to reboot itself, the brain isn't running through a number of files and gets to the profanity file and runs through that file, and there's this torrent of profanity all of a sudden, and then as the person recovers from the trauma, swearing recedes again. They don't do it any more than they used to do it, but just for that second, the brain's got to work through that material.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Dan. Tim in Eau Claire is with us. Hi, Tim.
Hi. When my son was 5, he ended up swearing in his kindergarten class and got in a little bit of trouble. My ex-wife didn't know quite how to handle the situation, so when he came over to my house next, I took him into the garage and I explained certain situations where swearing is unacceptable, school, church, mostly out in public. But then I also explained that, you know, if you're in the garage and you drop something heavy on your foot, not a bad time.
Well, there. That I guess he's. That's right, isn't it, Michael Adams?
Yeah, well, I have a 6- and a 4-year-old, and I worry sometimes about whether they'll just start swearing in inappropriate situations too. But I'm reminded by my daughter, who just even before she was 4, when she was surprised by something, started to say, "What the heck?" And I thought that she was getting it partly from the show My Little Pony, in which one of the ponies says "What the hey" all the time.
Oh, yeah.
And maybe from her friends too. And I thought, you know, it's the environment these kids are growing up in today. There's too much swearing, just like anybody else might think. And then one day she said to me, she said she was surprised by something. She said, "What the heck?" And then she turned to me and she said, "Let me tell you something, Daddy. Sometimes I say what the heck, and sometimes I just say what the." And when she said that at the age of, you know, all of 3 years and 10
wow.
months, I thought, this is a little bit more evidence that the brain is structured to manage profanity in some way, that young she already knows how profanity is signaled in language. And I don't think that's just a matter of environment. So I think, well, you have to deal with these issues with your kids fairly early, because they're going to start verging on profanity before you know it, and it doesn't make them bad kids, it makes them capable speakers.
Yeah, what the dot, dot, dot.
Yeah, I thought, this is a great moment for me, particularly as a historian of English, a metalinguistic moment with my 3-year-old daughter. I mean, what more could you ask for? But it took me by surprise.
Charles on Facebook says, "Naturally, this comes up at school. I don't rile much when students swear or tattle that someone else is cursing. Cuss words are just synonyms for which we generally have many other equivalents. Poo or poop are not the same as the S word," I guess is what, which I'm having trouble editing this on the fly here to make sure I'm not saying the wrong words on the air. "After instructing students in the skill of code shifting between discourse communities," well, this is heavy, "I teach that our verbal choices are indicators of class, like actually social class. We aspire to enter a profession or community with higher standards. We choose to speak with less profanity." Well, what about that?
My politics are going to come out here a little bit. It's certainly true that people think of profanity in that way. And it's also certainly true that our education system tends to think of itself as pushing people up a social ladder. We used to think of this vocabulary as vulgar, which means of the people, and distinguished it from the speech of people in higher class. So the caller's not wrong that it's an index of class. It has been for a very long time. But I resist the notion that there are vulgar people now, in the sense that just because you use certain language or dress a certain way, or say down and out on the streets instead of in a boardroom somewhere, that you're less of a person because of your language. I realize that's not what the caller is trying to say, but I resist the notion that that's sort of our singular goal, and I do it partly because once you're in that position in the boardroom, then you have a license to swear as much as anybody who's in a lower position in society, and that's an inequity. It just means, in a sense, that you've earned your right to swear, and it seems to me a false distinction among people in the end.
Blair in Lake Geneva is with us. Hi, Blair.
Hello. I had a question about the notion of swearing.
Historically, you know, it would be like an oath that one took of allegiance, and then you would, such as swearing by God's blood, you know, sounds, and eventually that word switched, and it became something that was the pejorative. And when did that switch happen, where we start to say, we refer to profanity as swearing, when it used to be something that was a kind of a positive thing of allegiance?
Yeah, well, you could use it as a matter of allegiance. You could say that and mean that, but the church at the time might have said, no, don't say God's wounds, because that takes God's name in vain. So it wasn't necessarily positive from everybody's perspective, even to use something that that light. There's a historical need to avoid God's name, so we've got, instead of Jesus Christ, which can be used as an exclamation, and some people use it that way, that's somewhat profane, you can come up with something like geez or gosh, or my favorite is Jiminy Cricket.
Right.
You know, which after Disneyfication doesn't seem like it's a profanity at all, but it was a way of avoiding the type of swearing that the caller is talking about. So plenty of people used it, just as plenty of people use profanity today, and it's a part of everyday speech, but the structure of authority at the time was just as critical as some people are today of profanity.
Well, this is Jamie in Rice Lake says she's a small woman and feels that she doesn't get heard very often, so she swears.
Uh-huh.
She's found it's a good way to get heard, especially in a man's conversation. Huh.
And that's why I say I want my daughter to swear. If she feels the need to do it, she should feel entitled to do it. And not now when she's 4 years old, but when she's trying to make herself heard in a man's world, if that man's world is still there, if the constraints on women haven't broken down a lot, I think that she may have recourse to profanity, and I say go for it.
Yeah. So what's your takeaway for our listeners when it comes to profanity?
Well, my guide to myself when I'm studying language is this, that people speak the way they speak for a reason. And as a scholar, my business is to try to figure out what the reasons are. But in everyday life, too, our knee-jerk reaction is not always the best reaction. People are using profanity for all kinds of good or productive reasons as well as the negative ones. And we should just be alive to that possibility and judge people's speech as it comes.
Thank you for being with us.
It's been a great pleasure.
Michael Adams, professor of English at Indiana University Bloomington, author of the book In Praise of Profanity. And his article that he wrote for The Conversation, Do We Swear Too Much?, is posted on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Thank you to Nyasia Ellison and to Breanne Shasso for producing this program. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. Much more to come. We're going to be talking about the Asian American vote and issues important to Asian American voters in our next hour of On the Campaign Trail. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.